Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hello, and welcome to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, coming into your ears once again on a Monday morning. And there's loads to get on with, so let's get on with it. It's a Champions Cup semi-final week with Exeter Chiefs, Leinster, La Rochelle, Toulouse, all not in that order. I don't know why I've said them in that order. But yeah, we've got that. We've got the Challenge Cup, the Premiership sorted out its top four. And Alex Lowe is with me.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good, good, thank you. Yeah, less croaky than last week.
Yes, you've recovered.
Yeah.
Suntan fading by the week
as well.
Yeah,
sadly. I was at Saracens on Sunday, watched the Gloucester game on Saturday on the telly. Good, yeah, good spirits.
We were talking off air, and we both reckon maybe only once have gone to what was the Allianz and now is the Stonex and seen Saracens lose. They just seem to have this mad home record. I mean, we don't always go there every week, obviously, because we're doing England stuff and everything else, but they're just a bit relentless there, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they were rusty first 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Mm. London Irish came out like a steam train, and they had to because Northampton had won Friday night. Northampton's, and that was the end of their season, and they'd opened a 7-point cushion in fourth place. So London Irish, I mean, there were various, it was a convoluted way of they could draw one game and win the other, but basically they needed two wins from the last two games. And they'd had a month, as we spoke with Les Kiss last week, they had a month to think about it.
Yeah.
And they came out and played brilliantly for 20, 25 minutes. Real like power. I think like the 20-minute mark, the tackle, I think Saracens made 47 tackles and London Irish made 5. Just as an example of...
Yeah.
But the variety of what they were doing was really good. Some intelligent kicking, real power, and some movement in the backs, creativity. Like they were testing Saracens, and they scored the try, penalty first, scored the try through Matt Rogerson, 10-0 up. They're in a really strong position. And then Ben Loder drops a high ball, and it was just one of those moments when a team who's on the front foot against Saracens cannot afford to do, because however scratchy Saracens are, they feed off those moments.
Mm.
They were just hanging in there. Farrell seemed to make about half of those 47 tackles. He was everywhere in defence. They just were almost hanging on, waiting for that foothold back in the game, which they got. And for the second half of the first half, they were all over London Irish, but they kept dropping the ball, mistakes at line-outs, scrum penalties against them. Nothing was really going their way. Then they manufactured a try out of nothing, quick line-out, having just dropped two... They'd wasted two opportunities inside the Irish 22 with drop balls. Itoje dropped his second one.
Yeah.
Irish cleared
That's
it.
Weird, that. Lots
and then they
drop.
Just... They then threw a quick line-out, Alex Goode to Max Malins. Like, what are you doing? Malins is stranded on his own, but they find a way out of it. Bang, bang, bang. Down the short side, Benell back to Alex Goode, score the try. And from there, this is only going one way now. They've sort of shaved the rust off themselves. Irish were starting to look frayed. Some stupid penalties, one from Rob Simmons in particular. 2 minutes into the second half, Rob Simmons gets yellow carded. Comes out another yellow card for him. High tackle on Theo Dan, who was awesome at hooker. And that's game over. Yeah. I mean, they managed that period pretty well, London Irish. It was 2016 at the end of it, having been 13-10 down at the interval, but Saracens were just in there finding their groove again. Farrell running the show, Theo Dan, and say really good. Driving Moore got going, and that was that. And it was Saracens, I think, just, you know, they're having to manage this odd period in the season where having lost to La Rochelle but already secured a home semi, they had 6 weeks of rugby, or 6 weeks till the semi-finals, with a couple of Prem games and then a couple of weeks off, in some enforced rest for England players. How do they manage it? Well, this was their, I think, their one proper hit out before the semi-final. I don't think they're going to go full bore. In the last weekend against Bath, Mark McCall said afterwards that you get a concussion and HIA in that game, your player misses the semi-final nowadays. So I don't think he's going to risk anyone there. So this was the game. And unfortunately for London Irish, it meant that Saracens had played a weaker team against Northampton and then a stronger team against them. And as we were saying before, there's a conspiracy theory. That Saracens prefer to play Northampton in the semi-final and so engineered it this way. I don't buy that, particularly the way they played on Sunday. I think they wouldn't have worried about playing
either way.
I do think that they will. The way that the two sides play, I'd fear for Northampton going to the Stone Eggs. But Saracens had to rest their England players for that Northampton game. Plus, as Declan Kidney, slightly through gritted teeth, he did say they have earned the right to do that by securing a home semi. Yeah. And what's interesting for me about Saracens is they just found that groove. They've got to try and maintain that momentum going into a home semi against Northampton, which I suspect that they'll win. But the other semi-final, can they match the power and the nous and the wisdom of Sale and Leicester Tigers? Their back row, as we said before, is depleted. Jackson Rae is having to step up, and he is stepping up. He was excellent again. So it's the climax of the season will be interesting. The problem is that we've got another round of the Prem to go with really hardly anything riding on it.
Yeah,
and and then a couple of weeks where the attention switches back to Europe.
Do you want some stats now from...
I'd expect nothing less
from... Yeah, well, the kind lads at Opta have helped with a few of these things that I'm going to turn into something for the Monday Mall for Time subscribers. And it doesn't look good for Northampton going to Saracens, basically, is the theme. Northampton, they smashed Newcastle on Friday night, and Newcastle kind of, some of those tries, like there was one where Alex Mitchell just walked through the middle of the whole defence, and you think, wow, that's not great. That was only Northampton's second away win of the season, which isn't the best, is it? Although, actually, Leicester only have won 4 away games of the season, so I think that theme of, I think we said it last week, that 82% of home teams win their playoffs. So getting that home semi for both Saris and Sale, really important.
And given that those stats, was it two weekends ago, there were 9 teams who could qualify for the top 4, and now it's done and dusted with a week left.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Saracens have won 4 out of the last 5 against Northampton anywhere, and Sale have won 4 out of the last 5 against Leicester anywhere.
Do you remember those days, though, when Saracens-Northampton was
massive
the
game, yeah.
derby?
2014, like, that sort of era, yeah.
It was like when Tonga Weir had effectively committed to joining Saracens and then ripped up the deal and went back to Northampton. Ashton did join Saracens from Northampton. Yeah. Saracens went up there and put that big banner on the lift tower next to...
did they? I don't remember that. Yeah. What was that?
Ed Griffiths was having the time of his life, just like poking the bear, trying to find creative ways to get under their skin. It just made, we talk about narratives and all that in the Prem. That rivalry at that period of time was fantastic. It was really kind of spicy, which is exactly what you want. You know, you want a bit of animosity, right within its context, some spice to a game, and this semi won't have that, sadly.
Yeah. Well, and Saris have never lost at home this season in the Prem either. They're 10 from 10.
Yeah.
And Sale have only lost once at home this season too. So it is really looking Sale-Saris-y in the final, isn't it? And the one thing about Northampton, which people have been writing about lots this season, is that they've been a remarkable team of two halves where their attack is the best in the league, but their defence is the worst. Mm. It's mad, that. Mm. I mean, most points scored, most points conceded, most tries scored, most tries conceded. They've got the most carry meters and most missed tackles. They've got the most line breaks and most line breaks conceded. They're such a mad team like that.
Yeah, but that's why Saracens will relish playing them. Because they'll bat themselves to put a blanket over that attack, but then and absolutely try and maximise against that, the holes in that defence.
Yeah.
With the intelligence that they've got, the playmaking intelligence that they've got, and the finishing qualities that wide. And they, they still have... they've still got players. Like Theo Dan has come in and he's been outstanding. And Jamie George will be back to play hooker in that semi-final. Theo Dan was outstanding on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. And I should probably apologise to London Irish fans for having said last week that I think they'll get through, and they bottled it the first opportunity. Well, but is one season too soon maybe for them? Yeah, they just don't quite have the depth everywhere.
I thought they'd get through because I thought Saracens would hold back their players.
Yeah,
or at least do
a half team, maybe, yeah.
So, yeah, shows that we know. season too soon, probably, although...
Depends
losing,
who owns them next year, I suppose.
They're losing Ollie Hassel-Collins, Rob Simmons, who has been massive for them. I had a few conversations with people at the club last week, including Les Kiss on the pod. It's clear how important he's been, and Tom Parton's leaving. Like, Henry Arundel's still on the bench there. Like,
yeah.
It feels like he hasn't...
Well, he came on early, didn't he? But
got swallowed up by Saracens. Yeah. So they've got the core still of an exciting team and some real young English talent there. They've got Fat Asavo at number 8, who on both sides of the ball is a monster. Like his carry off the back of a line out from the Matt Rogerson try just like punched a hole in the Saracens defence, and they scored two quick phases later. Really good. And then he melted Hugh Tizard. It was the most telegraphed little pass from Van Zyl that you could imagine, and Tizard got lined up from distance and on his blind side,
perfect aggressive tackle that was totally legal and brilliant.
They do have players. You talk about one season too early. They're going to lose some players. They do have a core there. They've got some really good coaches in place there. They've got some promising young players coming through. I was actually talking to Alex Corbusiero earlier this week, who's coaching out of San Diego. They've taken a young prop out there on loan from London Irish. He reckons that give him a year of playing MLR and just getting some rugby in him will be Premiership quality. Like
another one
prop, for next season. The problem is we don't know what the future looks like. And this week I heard from three different people who could know or should know what's happening with this takeover. Within 24 hours, I heard someone say the deal's collapsed. Someone say the deal is tangled up in red tape, regulatory issues over who the sort of primary owner would be because it's a consortium. And a third person saying, it's all looking really positive, it's almost done. So,
God.
Yeah, I mean, it's we asked Les Kiss last week about how the players have been shielded from that. There's a promising rugby club there, but there's no stadium. They still haven't, this takeover still hasn't happened. The month is nearly at its end. Are we sure the players are going to be paid? We don't want to get back into that cycle that we all experienced the first half of the season. So there's promise, but also worry for me over London Irish.
I suppose which segs us on to what we're going to get onto later. The thing they have secured now is Champions Cup rugby for next season, which should be a good thing. I mean, that always helps, doesn't it? The coffers. And the game that I was at, I wasn't actually reporting, but just went along with my girlfriend and her family, because they're all Bath fans, was the big summer kickoff, Quinn's Bath. And you look at Bath now and you think, God, it's remarkable. They're ninth in the same points as Bristol, and they could sneak into the Champions Cup, having been terrible for most of the season.
Yeah.
And in some ways you think, as with lots of seasons before, is that actually a good thing? Would Bath not be better in the Challenge Cup? I know they're getting Finn Russell to come, and they've never struggled to have a good team on paper, but you think the years and years and years and years of people sneaking into the top European competition and then absolutely getting smashed up the next season, I always hate that. It just feels pointless to me.
Ideally, the Champions Cup wouldn't be 24 teams because it becomes a slow burning competition. It takes too long for there to be matchups that truly matter.
Yeah. It always gets there, but it just takes five months.
It gets there, and you know, I will hear later in the pod about this coming weekend's semi-finals, and you know, Toulouse-Leinster is an absolute... Well, Leinster-Toulouse. I mean, what a showdown that's going to be. And the final, whoever's in it, it will be a belter. But it takes too long to get there for
Definitely,
me.
Yeah.
And the Champions Cup should be the best of the best.
Yeah. So on that big summer kickoff thing, as you were saying, Premiership rugby keen to kind of innovate and do some new things, and they want to take the lead from Quinns and do a few more of these big events, tent poles through the season where they kind of hang a narrative off them. And feel sorry for Quinns in some ways about this season, because It looked fairly sparse on Saturday, but even though it was still 44,000, it just doesn't help that it's a big stadium, isn't it? But they got completely savaged by the train strikes over Christmas, which meant they had to move the big game on the 27th of December. And I think that's lost them over £1 million just by the admin of then putting it on again in March against Exeter, which was that weird Marcus Smith game where he went back and played and they won. And then they were trying to sell that game and the one on Saturday in a kind of similar ticketing space. So maybe that affected the attendances. But on the field, they've dipped off.
You've still got to say 44,000 for a game with nothing riding on it.
Well, that was the other thing.
Look at it in context. That's a hell of a...
Because on Friday, if Newcastle had turned up, that could have helped Quins have a very vague shout at getting still into the top four. But having seen that result on Friday, everyone went, oh, right, well, there's nothing really on this game at all. And I don't know, something's happened to Quins this season. They were sort of comfortably third around Christmas and now dived off a cliff and conceding so many points, 40-odd points, 30 points every week. I don't quite know what's happened there, but too much sun in Cape Town.
Gloucester have fallen away similarly.
Yeah.
But in reverse, London Irish were bottom after 11 rounds and they were two games away from making the playoffs.
Yeah, well, and we mentioned Bath. Like, they were sort of absolute rock bottom for ages and now they could be in the bloody Champions Cup next season, which is mad. But so, well, we're talking about the Champions Cup. We've done a fair bit of Prem there, but it is a semi-final weekend. So why don't we talk all things Europe, or what was Europe? Because we've got two big guests coming up on the Ruck. We've got the chairman of EPCR, the guys that organise the Challenge Cup and the Champions Cup. That's Don Mackay. He's coming on to talk to us. And then after that, we're going to talk to England and Exeter Chiefs centre Henry Slade, because he's playing one of the last big games with all of his mates who are all leaving against La Rochelle and Bordeaux on Sunday, which should be an epic game. So let's
And as a West
those.
Ham fan, he's got two massive European semi-finals.
Oh yeah, the European Conference League.
As I do.
Wow. What were you saying off air? AZ Alkmaar, West Ham.
Yeah.
You can't get much bigger than that, can you?
No. As I've been saying all week, the Champions League on Tuesday and Wednesday is like the support act for the Europa Conference on a Thursday, which is sort of the European headline game of the season.
Yeah, wow. Are you going to get tickets for that? Where is it?
The semi-finals at Two Legs, so I'm going to I'll go to the home game.
Oh.
And then there's this sort of existential crisis about how can I possibly plan a trip to Prague for a final that I cannot bear
is it Prague? Wow.
To even consider that West Ham might be in, because there's a whole semi-final to play.
Who's in the other semis? Do you know?
Fiorentina and Basel.
Wow.
Are in the other semi.
Good knowledge. Well played. Yeah, we should mention at this point too, on a football note, you'll notice that Stephen Jones is not on this podcast after that result on the weekend. 6-1.
That was unbelievable.
That is a bit of an equivalent of Newcastle, isn't it?
Just I've tried to phone him a few times, but he's going straight to voicemail.
He's just going to be off for the next few weeks, recovering. Yeah. Well, we'll leave Spurs there, because we don't really have any knowledge on that, but we do have knowledge of European Cups and all that. So, and we've got people on who can tell us lots about them. So why don't we tee up first Don Mackay, and then after that we'll get on to some chat with Henry Slade too. Right, so now on the Ruck, we're delighted to be joined by Chairman of EPCR, Don Mackay. How are you, Dom? How's it going?
I'm very well, thank you, Will. Pleasure to be with you this morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks so much for coming along on a big week for you guys. Lots of semi-finals over the weekend. What does a successful weekend look like for you guys organising this competition? Well, both of them, actually, the Champions and Challenge Cups.
Well, it's a dream week in many respects when you've got the semi-finals of the Heineken Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup to look forward to. There's going to be some incredible games across the weekend. You know, that Leinster-Toulouse game is a mini, potentially, Rugby World Cup final. Mm. It's an incredible game. And then when you look across into France, you've got La Rochelle taking on Exeter, another unbelievable match. And then in our Challenge Cup, we've got representatives from France and Italy and Wales and Scotland. So again, it demonstrates, I guess, the power and the size and the scale of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, and that they're in such great health at the moment.
Yeah. So how are we doing for ticket sales? How many are you expecting at the big two in the Champions Cup?
Yeah, it'll be. I think we'll probably have around 45,000 over in Dublin, which is an incredible number. And we're very, very proud and pleased about that. So huge thanks to the supporters again for backing the clubs in these huge games. And then over in Bordeaux, it's sold out. Awesome. I mean, we'll have over 40,000. So the ticket sales, I guess, is one barometer of the health of the the competition and the direction of rugby, I think demonstrates that we're in great shape. And I know that the sales are really good in the Challenge Cup as well. So I think we're all seeing across sport people wanting to be back in stadiums, back in live action, following the challenges we all experienced during COVID. And there's nothing like a semi-final of the Champions Cup to get people excited.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dublin there. Obviously, that's where your final is. And people have been a bit, I don't know, if you're in Leinster, you think it's a great idea that you're playing in Dublin every time there's a knockout game. And they've top seeds, weren't they? So they benefited from that. But is that a satisfactory thing? Do you think that Leinster have played a lot of their home games in the knockouts pretty much? And lots of people outside Ireland would say, well, I don't know, there could be a better way of doing that. What would you say to that?
Yes, I recognise that there's different views on that, of course. I think there's also a pragmatic view, which is rugby is rebuilding itself financially off the back of a very challenging few years during COVID. So all the clubs get the opportunity to make sensible, pragmatic decisions about where they're going to base themselves for their games. And I know that, and you can see the crowd numbers that have come through those quarters, etc., for Leinster, that it's been financially helpful for them. And I think we would recognise that across the whole game, and because we represent three leagues and the stakeholders, we get to see rugby both from a professional point of view, but also from an international perspective. And we recognise that the game, you know, is important to generate revenues. And that's a reason that Leinster, of course, will have gone to the bigger stadium. Mm.
How do you balance choosing venues, Dom? Because on the one hand, there's the argument that a final venue should be completely neutral. And obviously, if Leinster make it, it'll be at a home stadium. On the other hand, for those of us who had the pleasure of being in Marseille last year, the fact that the Challenge Cup final was in Marseille meant that Toulon fans were able to stream along the coast and make the occasion what it was. There are two sides to that story.
Yeah, well, look, I have the privilege of hosting the European Cup final and the Challenge Cup final at Murrayfield when I was working up in Edinburgh. And it's a wonderful thing for a city to host such a prestigious set of finals. And it's brilliant for the supporters to travel and come and have a great experience in great cities. So we've actually just launched this week a bid process for 25 and 26, where we're looking across the sort of international family to see which cities and which stadium might like to host. And our balance has always been to make sure we get iconic locations and iconic cities that befit such a prestigious final. Marseille was incredible last season. You know, we were fortunate, the weather was amazing. We had 120,000 people across the weekend in Marseille for rugby, having a great experience with no problems whatsoever. And this weekend, this final will be in Dublin, and that will be sold out for the Champions Cup. The Challenge Cup will be over 35, 40,000. It'll be an incredible weekend in Dublin. And the vast majority of tickets are sold well in advance of anybody knowing who's going to be in the knockout stages, never mind who's going to be in the final. And I think that demonstrates the power and the size and the scale of the Champions Cup. We want to make sure we go into new markets and we grow the sport and grow the rugby sort of audience. But we also want to do that in a respectful way that doesn't make it impossible for supporters to get to certain locations. I was down in Cape Town just before Christmas, and the mayor of Cape Town was petitioning me very hard to bring a Champions Cup final.
I bet he was.
Down to Cape Town.
And some journalists are doing that too.
which is great. And again, it shows that there's a real interest in hosting these wonderful weekends. Our job is to try and make sure we balance the finance along with the sustainability of the tournament.
So, Dom, yeah, just to update our listeners, you said at the back end of last week you've opened the bidding for 25's final and 26's final. So do you think of those two, one of them will likely be in South Africa? Is that as early as we could see a South African final, do you think?
I genuinely too soon to say, I think, Will. I think our plan is to go to the market and see what the returns look like in terms of the cities and in terms of the venues. We're announcing tomorrow our finals for 2024, which is another unbelievable stadium in a globally recognised iconic city, which will be great fun and a great weekend again of rugby next season in terms of a final. Our job is just to make sure we keep building year upon year on our finals weekend and actually make the weekend a bit longer. Try and make activity happen from the Thursday all the way through to the Sunday, not just the two Champions Cup games and the two Challenge Cup games. We want to make the final as big as we possibly can. So the team are working quite hard to find ways to make it really exciting for the audiences to come and spend a couple of days in a city.
So do we have to guess,
yeah,
Alex, where the final is?
Yeah, we have to play a guessing game here.
I'm going to vote Amsterdam. I'd like to go there.
You can't tease us like that without giving us a little clue. I'm saying Barcelona.
Oh, that'd be good.
I suspect, I'm not sure where you're doing the podcast from, but I suspect you won't need to travel too far. that's all I'm saying. Oh,
okay. Trains or planes are we getting on?
I suspect you'll be on trains for this particular one. And what's been fun as part of the process is the number of cities who are new to rugby showing an interest in hosting these finals. And again, that's testament to the quality of the players and the quality of the teams that we put together, because the Heineken Champions Cup weekend and the Challenge Cup weekend do an enormous thing in terms of promoting a city and a country on an international scale. But they also generate a huge amount of economic impact for that city or for that country. So we make these decisions sensibly, but we also do that with our supporters in mind, because we want to make sure that those destination finals are fantastic for supporters.
So do you want to see a year in a few where there's a game, let's say in Amsterdam or Barcelona or Lisbon or Munich or somewhere like that? Would you like to take it to sort of non-traditional rugby
EPCR
venues?
EPCR had just got to the point of being adventurous like that when COVID hit, and then understandably had to...
Bilbao, Newcastle, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. So Newcastle, Marseille, Bilbao, we've got ambition embedded into the DNA of our new strategy. So we launched a new strategy last year, the first time actually for EPCR. And there's four parts to that strategy. One was about making sure we've got the best possible format and tournament we can have. Secondly, was investing in our brand to make sure that we look after our existing audience, but we grow our audience internationally. The third part was making sure we've got good alignment between our leagues. We represent the three leagues and we also represent the unions. And then fourth was our own innovation. Be smart, do new things, excite people, and do that in a respectful way. So as part of that strategy, we would love to make sure that our finals are in locations which excite and challenge our players, our coaches, but also our supporters. So if we can go to new locations as we've done in the past, we're completely up for that. And that's part of the reason why we've opened the bidding process up quite widely and done it over 2 years.
Yeah, okay. On the innovation thing, on the newest thing that you've done, I suppose, is inviting the South Africans to join. And I know none of them are in the last four of each competition, but they got into the last eight, didn't they? The Sharks and the Stormers. Where do you merit that now, a year or so on after having made that decision? Has it been everything you wanted it to be? Are there still teething problems? I mean, we saw the Stormers having to leg it to Exeter with a bit of a quick turnaround via various routes, didn't we? What can we iron out that would help next season with those South African teams?
It's been a perfect first year in many respects. I think the feedback that we've had from our sporting point of view is the South African clubs have added real excitement and drama and quality into the competition. So number one, sporting, we're pleased with the progress there. Secondly, in terms of the travel and logistics, our European teams that headed down South Africa have gone down and come back with great stories of positive experiences. Not only have they enjoyed the challenge of playing against South African opposition, but they've enjoyed the experience of being in a different hemisphere with the different challenges that throws up, and also giving them an opportunity to spend some time as a team away from the tradition of the domestic environment. So I think logistically, we're pleased with that. There's definitely some learnings for particularly some of our South African colleagues and our South African teams to work on, and we're keen to work with them on that in terms of sending teams up to the north in the best possible shape. And then thirdly, in terms of commerce, you know, we think it's got an opportunity for us to grow our commerce side, more financials back into the game. We've got a great partnership with the South African Rugby Union, a great partnership with the broadcaster SuperSport, and that will only build in the years ahead. So from an audience point of view, watching 35,000 spectators come out for the Stormers Harlequins game was a demonstration that the South African public are really beginning to fall in love with the Champions Cup and indeed the Challenge Cup, and that will only continue to grow. South Africa is an incredible country from a rugby and a sporting point of view. Our challenge is just to make sure that we keep building step by step.
Yeah, okay. So the other thing that fans will want to know the answer to, which I know you're keen to revamp the structure of the tournament for the next few seasons. So can you tell us anything about what it might look like next season? I think we know that it's still going to be 24 teams because we've got eight from each league qualifying. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. We've got a structure just now that we want to improve. And our format is going to evolve, and we intend to evolve it. What we want to make sure is that the format delivers the best possible sporting outcomes, and also delivers the clearest and easiest way for fans to clearly see how their team can progress. And it's importantly easy for broadcasters and journalists to explain and to articulate, to bring in new fans. And I think perhaps there were some compromises that were made previously on the format that didn't allow it to be the easiest narrative to explain, particularly at the beginning with the conference structure and how that flowed. So we really like the idea of going back to the pools. We're really interested in getting the pool format back front and centre. So we've got a little bit of work to do on fine-tuning our format for next year, and we hope to sort of finalise that in the coming weeks. But we're also looking further afield into future seasons. Are there further more strategic changes that we can consider or implement that would further develop and invigorate the competition? We've got a brilliant competition, so we don't want to do anything that causes it to be going backwards in any sense, but we want to make sure, like I mentioned earlier on, we innovate and we do things which are sensible to recognise that the game of rugby is changing. So how can we make sure that our format evolves to recognise the changing nature of the sport and do that in a way that is player-centric?
Yeah,
we want to make sure that the format works for the players logistically and it creates the drama that we all love. So but if you look at the format at the moment, there's some natural improvements that we believe we can make.
Yeah, yeah. So should we expect the last 16 to stay, or is it straight into quarterfinals? Do the number of weeks change next season, or is it going to be the same as this year?
So next season will be the same number of weeks. Yeah. We're certainly locked in for 8 weeks for next season. We're having a bit of a debate and a discussion internally with our colleagues about future seasons in terms of the number of weekends. We used to, if you remember, have 9 weekends, and we gave 1 weekend back to the clubs, partly to support their aspirations during COVID and to help them locally. We're being encouraged to have a look at that again. So we're looking at the moment at the number of weekends, the number of teams, and the flow of the weekends across the season. But we'll do that in a thoughtful way. We'll do that in a way that makes sure that we make the right sensible decision for the players and for the supporters. But there's some sensible tactical decisions that we believe we can make for next season that will further reinvigorate this outstanding competition.
6 pools of 4. That's what I reckon. That's what I'd do.
Well, you're talking to the right man.
There you go. That's my vote. 6 pools of 4. The winners of each plus a couple of runners-up. Straight into the quarters.
It's a very sensible suggestion. We'll,
with a final in Amsterdam.
Final of Amsterdam. Your sponsor's product doing well there as well.
you're in the wrong gig.
Well, look, Don, we've taken loads of your time this morning and really appreciate it. And all the best for the semis this weekend. There are going to be a couple of, well, 4 crackers, I suppose. So, but yeah, really appreciate you coming on and let's keep talking. Thanks for coming on The Ruck.
Well, Alex, it's great to see you.
Cheers, Don.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks very much, Don.
So I think we're being a bit ambitious there, aren't we, with Amsterdam and Barcelona. That might be our personal preference, but we pretty much know it's going to be Tottenham, don't we?
Yeah, well, they wanted to have it in Tottenham in 2021 and Marseille was 2020, but obviously those got moved because of COVID, where 21 ended up being 10,000 people at Twickenham and 20 was at Ashton Gates, wasn't it, with no one there next to winning it. So, yeah, likely to be Tottenham. Dublin only substituted in because Tottenham had a football clash, I think.
Yeah.
So likely to be Spurs.
Likely to be Spurs.
All right.
But I think, yes, it's not taking it to a brand new...
No.
City or country, but it is taking it to a new stadium.
And I suppose you quite get the sort of weekend vibe that they're talking about in London, maybe less so.
Because we're here.
I don't know. Depends who gets into the final, doesn't it? But the sort of Thursday to Sunday thing that Don was talking about, it's more likely to happen where lots of people are all travelling and it's a bit of a different city, maybe. I don't know.
Different experience. But Tottenham is it's an incredible stadium to play in.
Have you been? I haven't.
I had a chat to Danny Kerr, who was like beside himself with excitement about playing there. And from a spectator experience, there's not a bad seat in the house. Our predictions, I mean, by the time you listen to this, everyone, unless you're an immediate downloader, we may well know the answer, but we're expecting, I expect Tottenham
Should
for that.
Spurs,
but I do think they need to get that adventurous streak back in their decision-making a little bit. The top 14 took their final to Barcelona a few years ago and I think Stade de France was unavailable and sold out the Nou Camp.
Yeah.
And that, you know, then you're talking about an experience. You've got to keep it accessible, but wow, I mean, Amsterdam, Barcelona, they would be awesome.
The other two that I heard a few months ago that were just being talked about were Benfica, so Lisbon, that'd be pretty cool. And Munich, the Allianz Arena.
Yeah, because San Sebastian worked, didn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliantly. So.
Did you go to that one? That was Sarri's, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Slotty went to that one. But yeah, we'll have a good weekend in Dublin. But it would be good to evolve this championship, get the pools back, bring a narrative back to the competition. We spent a lot of time this week and we were talking to people at Prem Rugby, and the need to have a narrative through the season is paramount now. It's very clear commercially, engagement wise, and this season has been just all over the place. We don't quite know. You know, teams having weeks off, not helped by the loss of two clubs, but teams having weeks off, it feels like more jumping between competitions than ever. Plus, the competition itself, no one quite knows what it means. So I think they're moving in the right direction. He talked about innovating and bringing in new ideas. It's actually going back to a tried and trusted format.
The one thing that we didn't mention, which maybe we should have done, is that they've never been to Italy for a final, which feels a bit remiss.
Yeah, so they were due to go, weren't they? Milan, I think.
That would
San
be cool.
Siro was down, and then they got cold feet. I got a feeling they went to Newcastle instead of San Siro.
Okay, yeah, okay.
In the end, but again, Italy
won
that.
The World Cup. They've looked at going for it in 34, whichever
they were starting to get adventurous, and then COVID has forced them to hit a few guaranteed venues, and it'd just be nice for them to spread their wings a bit, I think.
Yeah, well, there's lots of administration chat done, and now let's talk to someone who's going to be on the pitch on the weekend, because next on the Ruck we're delighted to be joined by Exeter Chiefs and England centre Henry Slater. He's coming up next. Right, so now on the Ruck, we're delighted to be joined by England and Exeter Chiefs centre Henry Slade. And Henry, we were just talking off air, all your sporting teams got big finishes to the season. We've got Exeter Chiefs in La Rochelle against Bordeaux, Plymouth Argyle top of League One, and West Ham in a European Conference League semi against AZ Alkmaar.
The big one.
Which one's getting you more excited out of those three?
Well, I'll have to say our game.
Yeah, probably.
It's all exciting. It's all exciting. It's always the end, and this time of year when it gets down to business, the business end of each competition, it's always a good time to be a fan, I guess. But obviously, an even better time to be a player. So we're really excited. Massive week for the club. Obviously, things haven't gone the way we'd like to in the league, in the Premiership, but something really exciting for us to get after now in Europe, and boys are looking forward to it.
And I saw Exeter fans snapped up the tickets available for the semi in Bordeaux in record time, didn't they?
Really? Sold
out already. Yeah, sold out with a week or so to go. Yeah.
How many is that?
It's like 45,000, something like that.
It's gonna be a big occasion.
Is it? Bloody hell. Yeah, nice one. That's gonna be awesome. Like I say, hopefully we've got a fair few for you guys going down to support. It'll be class. Away trips in France are always ones to remember. But yeah, semi-finals in what looks like a pretty cool stadium should be a hell of an atmosphere.
Yeah, it's going to be quite different from your last European semi, which was Sandy Park, no one in the ground, COVID, Toulouse. What were your memories of that one? That was such a weird day, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, memories of that, yeah, unbelievable game. Toulouse, a hell of a side. One of the toughest games I've ever played in for Exeter Chiefs. French teams are obviously a real good balance, a lot of skillful players, a lot of some big forwards. And we just sort of had to stick in it. We stayed front. Toulouse had a few try-scoring opportunities in the first 15, 20 minutes, and we just hung on, ended up bringing it back, and may end up being very similar this time. Obviously, they've got some big lads, some very skillful boys. It's going to be a hell of a test. Like I say, it was very different back then. No one in the crowd. Sort of had to create your own atmosphere. I reckon it did sort of take home advantage away. Obviously having no one there, but it's going to be cool. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's added that extra little bit of excitement having a whole crowd there and selling out a massive stadium. It's going to be awesome. Like I say, we did win that one in COVID, but the only thing to sort of take the edge off it was that the fact that there was no one there to see it happen. So that's definitely something that's driving the boys on. And it's a really exciting time to be at Chiefs.
Yeah. So that team, obviously, that won that a couple of years ago, as we well know, is kind of breaking up, isn't it? With a few have gone already, but more leaving at the end of this season. So talk to us about the motivation of that kind of last dance feel to this end of the season with this, and let's hope one more big game to come.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's really hit me yet, to be honest, because all the lads are still here. And I still feel, on a day off, I'll still be like, oh, what are you guys doing? Let's go, we get lunch, or you know what I mean? We'll go out for a drink or whatever. I don't know if it'll hit me as much until they do their leaving speeches in a couple of weeks' time, in the last day or something, or next year when I'm at a loose end and want to do something with one of the boys and they're not there. But we have spoken about how it's, been such a long time. We've been together and been such good mates for so long, and that it's now coming to an end. And we've definitely made it. It's definitely given us massive motivation to send them out on a high and send them away with some silverware and give them a special ending to their times here, because they've given so much to the club. And for a lot of them, it's over half their lives they've given to this club and to the group and to the boys. So, yeah, we really want them to be given a hell of a present to go away with, and a European Cup would be just that.
Because your academy house, Henry, would have been, was who? Yourself, Luke, Jack, Dave Ewers?
Yeah. I shared a room. Me and Dave and I shared a room.
For how long?
It was quite a big room, but we had two beds in there.
Wow.
We shared a room for about 6 months, I reckon, until one of the other lads moved out, and then we all had our own room. But yeah, we were basically sleeping together.
So. That's a bond, yeah.
So that's how tight you guys have all been, from the academy days.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think it's been... Dave was actually here before a year or two. I think the year before us. So he's been 13 years, but it's our 12th year this year. So it's been, it's been a long time. And yeah, it's gonna be a sad day at the end of the season when we have to say all our goodbyes. But hopefully they'll be back. They'll be back seeing family and seeing us boys, and hopefully we might get out to see them at points as well if we get bits of breaks in the season.
Yeah.
But Dave's having his... Well, he'll be a dad at some point, so it'd be weird getting that sort of not being able to see his kid when they get born, whatever it is, boy or girl. Jack's obviously just had a new kid, so it's gonna be strange not being around him growing up. But yeah, hopefully we'll get to see him in bits here and there. I'm sure they'll be back, and I'm sure we'll get chances to go out and see him. But yeah, it'd be strange.
Yeah. So how do you, when you think about the match, balance it emotionally? Because I suppose you don't want to go too far down the road of this could be the last time and all that, because it might, I don't know, push you over the edge almost. And a big crowd, a big semi-final, you want to be as clinical as possible, I suppose. But it can be a fire in the belly too. So how are you trying to manage that through the week?
Yeah, like you say, it's a fine line, isn't it? You need that emotional energy to bring the best out of yourselves, but there is a fine line between boiling that over the edge. Well, I think we've been drawing on that recently in recent performances pretty well. I think the weekend was a pretty emotional one with the boys having their last home games at Sandy Park, and the last couple of European knockouts have been the same sort of thing. So I think we've been able to manage that pretty well on the whole. I think the key is for us not expecting it to be there just because we think it'll be there. We've got to prepare for these games like we always do, and add on that bit of emotional energy with that, and I think it creates a pretty good combination. Obviously, we know how good La Rochelle are. They need no introduction. They're an unbelievable side with some great players, very well coached, threats everywhere. So we know it's going to be tough. But yeah, we just want to. Give the boys a good send off and put in a performance that they deserve.
We've seen Jack and Noel packed down on the back row a couple of times, but as a player, how do you look at an opponent, a rival like Lavani Bottia, who can be just as devastating whether he's playing at seven in midfield or on the wing? He did such a job on Saracens in that quarter final. A, I guess what he brings to La Rochelle, but B, just as a pro rugby player, to see someone who can slot in any of those positions and be just as devastating. He's a unique talent, isn't he?
Yeah, unbelievable. He's as good as any seven you see over the ball. He can sling passes with both hands. He's got good feet. Like, you can fit anywhere. And that's sort of almost a perfect rugby player, you know what I mean? It is cool to see. It's definitely not something I could do. I'm nowhere near a threat over the ball, a threat over the ball like he is. Yeah, there's a handful of players that can do that. And yeah, he's a very special guy to be able to do that. And a massive part of their team and their success. So we're going to have to be right on our money dealing with him wherever he plays. So, but like I said a minute ago, they got so many players all over the team that you can't really single out who's the biggest threat, because you probably don't know. They've probably got so many boys who are like that. So it's going to be a hell of a challenge, but a really, really exciting week for us.
It's power, isn't it, that they build everything around, that the size of their pack is enormous. Do you guys, how do you embrace that physical challenge? You talked about that Toulouse game and maybe kind of having to recreate that mindset, but you've got to match them there first, haven't you, before you guys can think of doing anything else?
Yeah, 100%. You have to match, you have to match them physically and then try and expose them in areas that we'll try to. I'm not going to leak out what we're trying to do yet, but it's going to be a hell of a game. They got some big lads. We've got some big lads. It's going to be a big test for our big boys. You know, trying to match their lads in the physicality stakes is going to be no easy task, but it's something that's going to have to be done. I think lads are really excited about this week coming and the challenges they're going to face and being able to test themselves against the best, because they're definitely up there with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Henry, best of luck for it on the weekend. I'm going to be there. Bordeaux's going to be a good one, isn't it? I mean, 45,000 people, European Cup semi-final, you can't get much better than that, can you?
Awesome.
Nice one. You like your wine?
Yes. Actually, yeah, that's a good point. Didn't think about that. I'm getting an early flight on Monday morning, so maybe that might be a tricky one.
Bring some back with you.
Yeah, good point. Well, look, really appreciate you coming on, Henry, and all the best for the weekend and go and smash it.
Yeah, and to Plymouth and to West Ham.
Cheers, boys. Thank you.
Triple header.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, so next on The Ruck, we're talking all things Women's Six Nations with Jess Hayden. Jess, you're back. How was your weekend?
It was great, thank you. I was working behind the desk, so I had quite a busy weekend, but got to watch some women's rugby in between working, so it was good fun.
Absolutely, yeah. So last week we teed up the Ireland-England one, saying, oh, it could be nasty, it could be 100, but it wasn't in the end. So what do we take from that one? Was it a bit more positive for the Irish, even though they didn't score a point? I mean, it's odd to be positive about a 48-0 defeat at home, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, and I think it tells us two things. You know, it's a 48-0 win to start. It's important to just get that out there. And yeah, the England camp were talking afterwards about how disappointed they are with the result, and Ireland as well. I think they were quite pleased not to it be a, you know, 100-0 defeat. The record in that fixture is 79-0 to England, and many people, including Rachel Burford in her Times column, said this is going to be a record-breaking win. And it was an absolutely fair prediction. I think I said on The Ruck that it could well be over 100-point win. And I think there are a few things that cause the game to be a bit closer than that. And I know, again, calling a 48-0 win close is a bit ridiculous. But England, I think, kind of, there were seven changes to the side. They kind of failed to build momentum, especially in the first half. And there were so many unforced errors from England. I know they will not be happy with that performance at all. You know, missed passes, knock-ons, just really sloppy play at times. With Ireland, their defence was just incredible. At times, it was really impressive. They just did not give up fighting at all. There was a moment just before the game started and the anthems where the camera panned over Nicola Friday, the captain. And with all respect to her, the bags under her eyes were so telling because she's had a really awful week where she said she's been having messages from people saying she's letting Ireland down and that the team are should be ashamed of how they're representing the country. And I think that's really difficult for the players to hear. And they were obviously aware of people saying it was going to be 100-0, and they did not stop fighting. And that's what I was saying as well on the Rucker last week, that they will not give up without a fight. So yes, it's a 48-0 win. Can we say that's close at all? No, but it's a damn sight closer than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And slight bad news for England is that Marley Packer got injured, didn't she? So what do we know about that? Is she going to be fit for France, do you think?
We haven't had an injury update yet. So Marley Packer, the captain, and Hannah Bottom in the front row, they both were injured. Hannah Bottom has just returned from injury and was quite visibly upset at the thought of being injured again. Mm. Marley Packer was in a boot after the match, but Simon Middleton joked that even if a player has a bad shoulder, the medics always put them in a boot after the match as a preventative measure. So yeah. I doubt either will be playing next weekend at Twickenham for obvious reasons. They both look very injured. They're both very tough players. Marley Packer especially, she doesn't go down easily and she doesn't go off the pitch easily. I spoke to Rachel Burford earlier, just catching up on the weekend, and she thought that perhaps Marley might just beg the physio to strap it up and let her play. It looks like an ankle injury. We haven't had an update yet, as I say, so that she can go out at Twickenham, because it's a huge occasion. You know, the Red Roses' first standalone fixture there, and to lead your country out at Twickenham is obviously an amazing opportunity. So, yeah, no update yet, but I'm sure both will be fighting this week to try and get as fit as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get on to the decider, England-France, in a sec, but we should probably mention the Scots, shouldn't we, first? Ending a 12-match losing run, that was probably the most marquee result of the weekend.
It was lovely for Scotland. There were scenes at the end of the match there. Rachel Malcolm, the captain, in floods of tears as soon as the final whistle went. Because it's their first win in almost 2 years. They've had a run of 12 losses. The World Cup wasn't great for them at all. And it meant a lot. Italy are a really good side as well. And I predicted that Italy would win that match. It was close, 29-21 to Scotland in the end. But Scotland were just great in that final 20 minutes. They held on. And I really hope that now this gives them the confidence to kind of build on that, and they face Ireland in the final round of the Six Nations, and there's every chance that they could put a performance against Ireland as well, so that game will be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, so should we talk the finale, the potential Grand Slam for England if they were to beat France? The 50 odd thousand plus are going to be at Twickenham, but the biggest question is, Jess, what's your favourite Sugar Babe song?
You're obsessed with the Sugar Babe.
You are.
Alex, are you going to offer one?
You mentioned this before but last week as well. You just love the Sugar Babes. My favorite song is
quite a cool get. So I was talking to someone who will remain nameless on our Time Sport desk, because I was going to the Quins game last weekend and thought, I was just saying to them, well, it's quite cool they've got Kaiser Chiefs, and he was a bit like, well, yeah, maybe in like 2008. He was like, I'm more excited about Sugar Babes, and then reeled off about 15 Sugar Babes songs, and I was like, wow, it's a good effort. So you're not going to give me one? I'm push the buttons, mine, I reckon.
No, Push the Button's mine. I love that song. Yeah, it's a classic. But I'm definitely going to ask you once we finish recording who the person on the desk is.
Yeah. Alex is a bit too cool for Sugar Babes, I think.
I can't.
They don't go to Ronnie Scott's march, do they?
No. I don't think so. Is it still the same? Oh, no, that's not our side question.
No, they change the lineup every 5 minutes, don't they? But anyway, so more importantly, actual rugby on the field. It always ends up with England France, doesn't it? But Are we going to see France cause an upset? They seem to always get so close to England and always lose. This feels like there's a bit of a mental block there.
You know, this game is incredibly hard to call because France have just got stronger through the tournament, and they won 39-14 against Wales over the weekend and are just looking stronger and stronger. And at the start of the tournament, I thought they kind of looked a bit unorganised on the pitch. They didn't really seem to have a clear game plan and they lacked fitness. And as the tournament's progressed, they've just got stronger and stronger. And that performance against Wales was really something. It was 29-0 at half time, and Wales won the second half, as they say. But really, France were the dominant force there. And I think because England have had a relatively poor performance in round four, it is all to play for, especially with the injuries that England now have. And just to remind you that Marley Packer and Hannah Bottomman are the latest injuries. There are so many players missing from England's squad who would normally be in that starting team. So England are potentially a lot weaker than they were at the World Cup when they won just 13-7 against France in the pool stages. So it's all up for grabs. And as I say, I was speaking to Rachel Burford earlier, and because she's so close to the squad and she knows a lot of these players and has played against a lot of the France players. And her opinion was it's too tight to call, and whoever shows up on the day will take the Grand Slam. So It's going to be a really exciting match. And having 50,000 fans in Twickenham, I think we automatically assume that that's an advantage to England. But England aren't used to playing in stadiums that full. We know what happened at the World Cup final. And the whole Eden Park was behind New Zealand, really. And England struggled. And a lot of that, I think, was the pressure of the noise that they just weren't used to. And what players have said to me about the final was we could not get messages from the coaches onto the pitch because it was so loud. And I do wonder whether that will be the same at Twickenham. You know, can the players cope with that loud noise? Whereas in France, they are very used to having large crowds, not 50,000, because this will be a record for a women's rugby fixture, record crowd. But they are used to having lots and lots of fans in their stadium. So they are more used to that support and the noise and the pressure of being in that kind of environment. So it really is all to play for. I think people assume that this is going to be an England walkover. Far from it. It will probably be quite low scoring, in my opinion. And Will, I'm scared to give you my predictions because I've been wrong. And I said 100-0 for England Ireland. And, you know, you said to me last week, sometimes we have to make predictions and make ourselves
Yeah,
and I've definitely taken my fair share.
I
think it could be quite low scoring.
Okay, all right. And if she's wrong, at Jess Hayden on Twitter, pile on.
£10,000 fine for you.
Yeah. Awesome, Jess. Well, we'll try and get you back on next week after the finale and everything else. But next on The Ruck, we'll do our God or Goddess of the Week nominations. Right, God or Goddess of the Week time, Alex. Have you got a nomination at your fingertips, or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, so I reckon, honourable mention to start with, to the current leaders of the RFU Championship, Jersey Reds.
Yeah.
Great effort. So they beat Ealing, 19-13 at home on Saturday, moved top of the table. They're now 2 points ahead with a game against 7th Plainth Amptill to come. Ealing have got Doncaster in 6th. But neither can be promoted, which sucks, doesn't it? But,
well, Jersey didn't even want to be promoted.
They didn't even submit to the
process.
But it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because for all the consternation about, oh no, they've blocked Ealing's passage to the top flight. Well, they've still got to win the league, and they probably won't now. So that's a slight moot point. And actually, I think, to be honest, from conversation we've been having, promotion and relegation, don't expect it to come back for at least 3 or 4 years, guys. Like, I think it's going to be a close shot for a while.
Yeah.
But right, my actual nomination is Ben Earl. Watching the game you were at on Sunday, just loved everything he was doing, from running the most metres of anyone on the field to a few turnovers, one at the end, and a lovely grabber kick to the right-hand corner, where actually I think he was just tired and was left on the right wing, but then went, oh, there's suddenly a space. Arundel popped up and he put it in behind and hit it off the corner flag, and it ended up with Maui's first try. So he's going to be my God of the Week nom.
Yeah, it was close to being the best kick of the game, but I thought Rory Jennings, who did execute a 50-22 for me, although I suppose it is more his position as an inside centre, but he played really nicely, especially in that first period when London Irish were on top. And it was his 50-22 that set the platform for London Irish scoring their first try. And then the last kick of the game, or right near the end, Farrell kicked a touch with his left foot.
Oh, yeah. Just for a laugh.
Just for a laugh. He was asked about it afterwards. He was like, well, it was closer to the touchline.
Why not?
Yeah. Although, as he walked in, he saw the Man United FA Cup semi-final on the
the
telly, and like his jaw tensed up. He started talking about their Europa debacle on Thursday night.
And, oh, no.
So we had to drag him out of that to talk about the game. My nominee, it's an odd weekend because there's just not been enough meaty games to take your judgment from. I'll go, Farrell was awesome again. I mean, he's just He was excellent. But I will go Theo Dan because it's just really nice to see young players being given an opportunity at the highest level and taking it.
Mm.
We talk a lot about the system at the moment not allowing these young players to play enough games. Injuries and suspensions and rest have allowed him a few performances, a few opportunities for Saracens, and man, he's taken them. So I'm going to go for him because we all love to see the next generation of talent bursting through. And
yeah,
he's class. So yeah, he gets my nomination. Maybe a devil of the week in honour of Mark Evans, who brought this to the pod, just to the two Major League Rugby coaches who ended up
in America
turning their game into a boxing match. There's a clip of it flying around social, which is kind of remarkable. But yeah, maybe a devil nod to them. But
I'm just thinking, like, we haven't talked about it much, but the Jack Knoll 10 grand fine for tweeting. Imagine the ban you'd get.
Yeah, I could give a devil to the panel who gave him 10 grand. I mean, if you read the judgment, the judgment's really interesting, isn't it, Will?
Yeah.
In it, he says, I'd actually rather take a ban than a fine.
Possibly knowing he was injured.
And secondly, the panel, he was asked to present his financial situation to the panel, which is redacted in the full verdict. But they've obviously decided he can afford to pay a 10 grand fine.
Yeah.
Quite what happens if he now just heads off to France without paying it.
Well, they've said it has to be paid before the start of the French season in that, I think. And he has to do this refereeing course and get a qualification.
Yeah.
Which I asked around about that. And it's a 6-hour introductory to refereeing course thing. 3 hours in person and 3 on virtually, basically.
See, for me, that would have been the perfect punishment. I think 10 grand is, whether Jack Law can afford it or not, these guys aren't footballers. That's way over the top for me. A referee course is a great idea.
Mm.
You know, it takes up a day. It's a day of his time, but it's actually a proactive, productive thing for him to go and do. For me, that would have been enough.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, there have been some Gods of the Week nominations. I might sneak in one very, very last honourable mention to a combo between Adam Rabwan and Matteo Carreras, who the only try that Newcastle actually scored was an unbelievable finish. So we'll see if Carreras, who actually gave the assist to Rabwan, beats Murley. That's basically the only thing that's left sought out for the try scorers of the season. But yeah, for now, that's been a packed and bumper ruck. Hopefully you're all looking forward to Champions Cup semi-finals on the weekend. Challenge Cups, if you're interested in that as well. And after those are all finished, we'll wrap them all up and come back next Monday to sort it all out. And by that point, we'll have 2 European finals on the horizon. But for now, thanks for subscribing. Thanks for listening. And this has been The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Epically produced by Alfie Reynolds. And we haven't mentioned him for a bit, so there you go, Alfie, there's your mention. Goodbye, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.